Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Teja, and today I'm joined by a regular guest on our show, Anthony Taskow. This time, we'll be talking about the Art in Marketing book, why we need less science and more art in marketing. Taz spent many years as an ad agency planner before becoming a trainer for various organizations, including the Chartered Institute of Marketing. He is also a TEDx speaker, strategist, and lecturer. The Art in Marketing book challenges the prevailing notion that marketing is, or should be, a purely scientific discipline. It offers a compelling path to heal the artificial divide between science and art in marketing, demonstrating how a deliberate shift back towards an art-centered approach can unlock greater saliency, differentiation, creativity, and profound insight for brands in today's complex marketplace. Hi, Taz. It's great to have you again on the Lit Radio podcast. How are you?
I'm good, Taya. You all right?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. So today I'm very excited to talk to you about your latest title, The Art in Marketing book. So let me first start with why you decided to write the book in the first place.
This one, I've been sort of playing with these ideas right from the very first book, the storytelling book, because the part of the reason I wrote that 10, 11 years ago was I just thought there was too much emphasis on science, on facts, on rationality, on numbers. And as somebody that worked in the ad industry, I could see that happening. It was happening like 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I understood why, because, you know, we need to prove things, we need to have accountability, we need to try and convince CFOs that advertising is worth investing in. But what I worried was that the balance had got slightly out of kilter. There was so much emphasis on facts and numbers that we were sort of beginning to forget the other element, which is the creativity and the art and the unpredictability. So what I wanted to do was just look a little bit more into the sort of theoretical underpinnings of marketing. Because again, when I was as an account planner, marketing, people wanted to make marketing a science because they thought it would, like, you know, as Woody Allen said, it would eat at the grown-ups table. And again, I can understand that. But so really the book was about developing this idea that one, is marketing a science? Should it be a science? And then two, if it is a science, which science should it aim at? You know, because I think a lot of people thought it should be more like physics, where everything is very logical and atoms are all the same. So in the book, I argue it should be less like physics and more biology. And then the third part is, OK, forgetting science for a moment, can we just look at art a little bit more? So it was really about trying to develop those ideas and sort of, you know, fill it out into a book, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we talk more about that, let me first ask you about what was it like to write this book? Obviously, you've already written quite a few titles. So was that this one any different?
A little bit. I mean, and as you say, Tess, this is number 8, believe it or not, book. So I've got used to doing this. But what I wanted to do with this one was to take some thoughts that I'd sort of half expressed and then just dig a little deeper and write a little bit more about them. So it was different to, for example, like the Insight book or the Consumer Behaviour book, where I was doing a lot of original research. With this, I'd done a lot of the thinking. It was just a matter of just sort of digging a little bit deeper into it. And then also deciding how much to sort of get into the depths of what is science and what is art, because I didn't want to sort of, you know, because you can write a million words about that. So that's the slightly different approach for this one.
Interesting. Yeah. And then going back to what you said a bit earlier about, so even when you started writing the storytelling book, which was 10 to 11 years ago, you were thinking that we were getting too obsessed with numbers in marketing. So is that still the case today? And what are some of the reasons for that? Obviously, you've mentioned that we need to prove, we need to invest in advertising to the finance people. But are there any other reasons for this to be happening?
Yeah, I think it's happened across society. I mean, there are all these expressions the Americans use, like drinking from the fire hose or whatever it's called. And we are literally bombarded now everywhere with numbers and data and algorithms. And again, one of the things I spend a lot of time on, as you know, Taya, writing and training is getting people to do presentations which are less terrible, which are less boring and less awful. And that's part of the reason as well, is that I've just noticed people doing presentations, students, teachers, government, everyone now is just so obsessed with this way of presenting facts and information and data. So part of this, I've just noticed, it's got worse and it's got everywhere. So part of what I've been trying to do is just to sort of bring it to people's attention that we know we're doing this. We know that we're spending hours and hours boring people stiff with PowerPoint presentations or teaching parents about their kids and key stage three and key stage four with loads and loads of spreadsheets and numbers. I mean, we all know that it just feels awful. It just feels really boring and really depressing. So I think it's got worse, not just in advertising, but across, most aspects of society. So I'm trying like Sisyphus, I'm trying to push the ball or the boulder uphill, but it still comes down. But at least if I can just try and do my little bit to say to people, yes, I know we have to have numbers. Yes, we have to have KPIs and metrics, and the government has to have targets to hit and all those sorts of things. But can we just be aware that that's not everything, that there are other things that we have to measure or do?
Yeah, and what do we miss when we focus solely on the numbers and the science?
Yeah, I think what I wanted to do again in the book, and it's, I don't want to sort of sound too sort of trivial about it, but there was a talk I did for an organization a while ago, and it was about being more human. And I always think, do we have to really have to say that we should be more human? But we do. And the whole thing about storytelling and behavioral economics and all the stuff in that sort of area is it reminds us that human beings are not computers. Our brains are not designed like computers, and I've talked a lot about this in various books. Our brain is not a sponge, it's not a computer. And it is, as someone once described, our brain is story shaped. So a lot of what I'm just trying to do is to say, if we look at story, but also we look at creativity and art and imagination, and there is that in science. I mean, all scientists are, have imagination. They don't just sit there with numbers. So it's really about just trying to get a little bit more of all those other things that have perhaps been forgotten. Not to say that we need to get rid of numbers and facts, because that's not going to happen. And I'm not the enemy of data anyway. It's simply that if you have nothing but data and spreadsheets and KPIs, A, you're missing out a lot of the exciting, joyous stuff about life. And B, that's often the stuff that's hardest to measure or can't even be measured. It's like quality. What was the quality of the chocolate that I've just eaten? I don't know. I'm not sure I could describe it as quality. Did I love it? Yes, because I love chocolate. But on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the quality of it? There are certain things that once you start putting them in those boxes, you're missing out all the really important stuff. So again, part of the book is just a reminder to notice that.
Yeah. And obviously here then comes the question about arts. So what role can art play in marketing?
Yeah, I think for me, excuse me, because I've worked with creative people in ad agencies. I just had a chat this morning with one of my old friends who was the creative director behind Specsavers, who wrote Should Have Gone Specsavers. And he's a great thinker, he's a strategist, he studied English. But creativity is about an art, is about, as someone once defined it, encouraging strangeness and violating convention. And I think that's a pretty good motto. So whether you're trying to create a website or come up with a new idea for your brand or piece of communication, to violate convention. So Bartle Bogue Hegarty, anyone who's listening will remember that very famous agency. They still exist. John Hegarty said, "When others zig, we zag." And that's what art is. Art is about saying, well, everyone's done it like this, and I'm going to do it like that. So Picasso became an absolute expert in all sorts of art, but then he looked at African tribal art and then thought, okay, what happens if we throw that into the mix, you come up with futurism, cubism, etc. So for me, it's just reminding ourselves, and often people who are in decision making, who have money and power, that everything can't be reduced to numbers and science. You have to let creative people, brand people, imagine. You've got to let them be artists in that sense. So I often say there's like sort of logic, magic, logic. So there's logic at the beginning where you try to understand your problems, and there's probably logic at the end where you try to measure what you've achieved. But the bit in the middle is the magic, and that's the creative bit. And even with AI, I worry slightly that we're just delegating that magic to something else or someone else. But I think the more people understand how art can work, I think the more creative communications and marketing will be.
Yeah, definitely. And so that makes me think about the other thing the marketing world is obsessed with, which is differentiation. So, do you think art can play a huge role in actually making us different from our competitors and make us stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the things that I was just saying about artists, what they generally do is they look at so whether it was like I don't know, expressionism, or whether it was surrealism or cubism or futurism or Tracy Emin or whatever, people, great artists can say, okay, everyone's done it like this, no one's done it like that. And I think in at least a couple of the books I've mentioned this poll that was done with curators of art galleries in the 20th century. And all the most famous curators of the most famous art galleries were asked, what's the most influential piece of art of the 20th century? Not necessarily the best, but most influential. And it wasn't Picasso, and it wasn't Magritte. It was actually Marcel Duchamp, when he put a toilet, a urinal, in a gallery in New York. And he signed it, I think it was called R. Mutt. And the reason that was considered, because it's no one could think it's great art. It's not beautiful like Renoir or Matisse. But why they said it was the most influential was it just changed what the definition of art was. It said, look, anything that you create, even if it's something odd or trivial, and you put it in an art gallery, by definition, it becomes art. And I think that's what good creative people do. They'll say, okay, everything's always been like this. So why don't we try and do something like that? And some of the great brands, have been created on that basis. So I think, again, that's really art with a sort of capital A. That's what the role of art is that differentiation, seeing things that other people don't see. And again, I've written a book about insight, and insight is very much, in that same sort of space as well.
Yeah, definitely. And something very interesting that you do in the book is talk about the right type of arts to use in marketing. So, what's that type of art?
I think again, really, it's about saying, okay, if you're whether you're a student or whether you're a creative person writing ads or coming up with brands, I think art is about license. It's about giving people sort of permission. And again, because I was working in ad agencies and I still do some of that work with brands, you're somewhere caught in the middle between clients who've got very factual commercial needs, like to launch this car or create this new microwave, or client I'm working with at the moment, trying to get people to recycle more. So they're at the very sort of hard commercial end. But what they're trying to do is get creative people to say, okay, how do we turn that into something that people can relate to and engage with, to use that term? And it's again, it's a combination of art and stories, and in particular, the word that I go on about all the time, emotions. And I think that's what artists are particularly good at doing. And I think I mentioned in the book something called Stendhal or Stendhal syndrome. Because the artist Stendhal, I think he went to the gallery in Florence, the Uffizi. And apparently he just looked at this piece of art and he was like overwhelmed. He couldn't, just didn't know what to do, didn't know how to feel because he was so. Now, advertising and brands don't necessarily do that. But I think you want that emotional response from a good piece of communication. Whether it's an ad or a speech or a presentation or a website, you want people to feel something that has an impact on them. And again, for me, that's what people who are, accountants or CFOs or in charge of the spreadsheets, that's what they have to allow the other people to do properly because that's what they're good at doing.
Yeah. And now, well, let's go back to science a little bit. Because as you've discussed, we can't get rid of the numbers and the science. So we need to find a nice blend between art and science. So in the book, you actually have some principles on how to do that properly. So let's just discuss a couple of those, starting with beware, reductive is seductive. So what do you mean by that?
A few people know that I could go on at length about this. So if you're listening, David Penn, he knows a lot about this. I'm obsessed with this idea of reductionism, which again is a scientific principle, and it's been very successful in the history of science. So you take something and you reduce it to its components to understand it. And in many, many ways, it's a brilliant way of understanding how things work. Especially things that are made of different components. And that was the only game in town for a long time. And then complexity theory and emergence theory came out in science, and they said basically that some things can't just be reduced to their elements. So for example, if you look at water, it's made of hydrogen and oxygen, but it's not just hydrogen and it's not just oxygen. It's the fact that they make something different together. They make water. And there's again, a lovely expression that I've used in a couple of the books about, again, complexity theory. And someone said it's the difference between a jumbo jet and mayonnaise. So a jumbo jet is complicated. So there are thousands and thousands of bits in a jumbo jet. But if you take them all apart, you can put it all back again. But mayonnaise is complex. Once you add all the egg whites and everything else, you can't unmake mayonnaise. So that's one of the things I think is quite interesting, is that reductionism, especially if you're looking at human behavior, you can't always examine it from just individual people. A lot of things happen by groups of people, by conformity, all those sorts of things. But there's a tendency in marketing to try and reduce things to like one idea or one line or one behavior. And I think we just have to understand that a lot of human behavior just isn't like that. So being reductive, trying to reduce things to something simple, it can be very seductive, it can be very easy, but often it's either wrong or it's boring.
Yeah, and human beings are very complex anyway.
We are complex, not com we
Yeah.
are complicated in that sense, but we are complex because we are the combination of so many different things that you can't untangle.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Okay, and then the other principle that I would like to talk about is the order of me. So could you talk us through this principle?
I can't remember exactly which book it was. It's on my shelf somewhere. I've always been interested, excuse me, again, it's partly a behavioral economics thing, in the fact that marketing always used to talk about micro targeting and particularization and talking to the individual. I remember when I used to work at Ogilvy with Ogilvy One, it was all direct marketing is all about talking to individuals. And again, that's partly true, but also an awful lot of behavior, as I've said, isn't about individuals. It's about having a tribe or a group that you belong to. And again, for me, a lot of science-led thinking in marketing tends to look again at sort of individuals. And we worship at the altar of me. It's all about one person, or often it's about how I think, marketing should work or the brand should work. So I think, again, one of the implications of all of this is not necessarily focusing on like individuals, but focusing on groups. Or focusing on what it is that unites people in, as a target audience or whatever, and not becoming so obsessed on the altar of like one person or one idealized person. Because again, sometimes that can lead us astray.
Interesting. So, when you say that, obviously we know in the marketing world a lot of the time marketers they work with an ideal persona. So, yeah, is that what you mean? Is that something we shouldn't be doing as
Yeah,
much?
because as a planner, I spend a lot of time writing target audiences and personas. And all I'm saying is, we just have to be careful because sometimes you end up with something that is just not real. It just becomes like an abstract. And again, what might be more useful is looking at different types of behaviors or different types of attitudes or something that links sort of people together. So that is definitely one sort of, one sort of element just to be careful about in terms of this sort of the alter of me.
Yeah, and it all goes back to really understanding human behavior.
Yeah, and again, having written the consumer behavior book and, all the other stuff that I've talked about and trained on with behavioral economics, I still find there are an awful lot of people who really don't want it to be true. They really want to think that their audience are robots or automata or literally just like read a piece of advertising and take it in and process it as data. And we know that's not true. Any normal human being knows that's not true. But there are still enough people in the marketing and business world, and not just finance people or accountants or IT people, an awful lot of people who really should know better. And I just say to them, look, just read, Thinking Fast and Slow, or Nudge, or any of my books, or and then look at remember that you don't behave like that, so don't expect your target audience or even your colleagues or stakeholders to behave like that. So that sort of human emotion story, all those things for me, again, they run through this book like they run through, most of my stuff, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. And then I've got just one final question to summarize this conversation, thus. So for anyone who is working in marketing and might be listening to us today and wants to and are looking to differentiate their brands and campaigns, what are the first steps they should take to get away from their obsession with numbers and utilize the power of art a little bit more?
Yeah, I think I'd say two things really. I suppose I should say three because it's always three in storytelling. Firstly, please, do as much of the number crunching as you want. Understand, excuse me. I understand why you need to do that. You have to understand your market. You have to prove to the people at the top that you've done all the research, you've done all the analysis. But in the same way that this guy called, I think it was George Wallace, I think from 1926, I wrote about it in the Insight book. He said, if you want to get insight, you have to go through three stages. And the first stage is immersion. So yeah, by all means, immerse yourself in the market, read as much, find as much research, whatever, do all the data gathering. His third stage is illumination, which is when you get an insight, you get something creative. But the second stage, he talked about, he called it incubation. And that's where the art comes in. That's where the magic comes. And that's why I say to people, you've got to allow time and space and also the right people to do the incubation. In other words, go away, absorb all the stuff that you've immersed yourselves in, work with a creative team, give them a brief, and then let them come up with the magic. Let them take time and think about something which is unexpected. And again, one of the things that you have to understand about insight and art and creativity is one of the big six emotions is surprise. And I find myself dealing this all the time with clients. Well, they'll say, okay, I want to do something different with my brand, so give me something surprising. And then you show them something, and I say, not that surprising. Some other type of surprising. And you go, hang on, but that's the point about surprise, is that you can't see it coming. There's no tightrope. So I think again, one of the things that I say in the book and again throughout really is imagination is core and creativity is core. And whatever you are doing, you've got to leave the time and the space. And people who are good at that, give them those opportunities to apply the art. And then you can come back to the logic. It's fine with all the proof at the end. But if you think it's all going to be a rational, logical process, you're going to end up doing the same as everyone else and falling into the same traps. And lacking in differentiation and lacking in saliency.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Tas, for your time today. It was great to have you again on the podcast, and I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the Art in Marketing book to read more. But thank you for your time.
And thanks again for talking to me, Taya.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.